Hey there, and welcome to the latest episode of Mobile Wallet Marketing Made Easy, the podcast that helps you navigate the ever-changing landscape of mobile marketing.
Hi there, I'm Kim Stewart.
And I'm Hazel Fruitman.
And we're here with a new podcast episode. This is our first episode of 2018, and today we're going to give net neutrality a workout.
That's right. It's a new year, and since most of our customer base is located in the U.S., we decided that would be a great time to talk about net neutrality and what it means to our customers, to Americans in general, and potentially the rest of the world.
Yeah, this is going to be a hard topic to keep from turning into a political rant on my part, but I think I can keep it together long enough to get the facts on the table, do a little history lesson, and then leave it up to the listeners to determine how they feel about the situation.
Yes, but most of our listeners are U.S.-based entrepreneurs, many of whom rely on the internet for marketing, advertising, customer service, or other forms of customer communication.
And those little things like customer service via the internet or being able to advertise your products and services cheaply are incredibly important to small entrepreneurs, makers, family businesses, and people like that. So we should take a moment and address those entrepreneurs who aren't yet using our mobile advertising platform. Seems like a great time to do it.
Yes, so let's do that now.
Okay, so Hazel, how about your two-minute summary of how mobile wallets can be used to create the most amazing mobile advertising model that's out there right now?
Great. So mobile wallet campaigns are incredibly effective marketing collateral when you set them up correctly and implement them in a way that increases engagement with customers, prospects, referrals, and so on. In a nutshell, a mobile wallet campaign consists of a mobile wallet pass that's added to individual phones. iPhones use Apple Wallet, which is native iOS application. And Android phones use any of a number of third-party apps to achieve the same goals. The pass has two sides, the front and the back. The front of the pass is like a digital calling card. It normally has the name of your product or business, perhaps a tagline or logo, and should be styled to complement your existing logo and collateral. We can include a QR code and a barcode on the front of the pass if you're interested in tracking users via the passes, although the tracking default does not contain any personal information unless we have created a customized solution for you. The front of the pass should be designed to get someone's attention, colorful maybe, or with a unique tagline or similar. It requires a very simple, clean design since most phone screens are not that big. The back of the pass is where the magic happens, as I like to call it. And this is the area of the pass where you're really going to be able to get your message out there and include some very efficient calls to action that result in quantifiable results. The structure of the mobile wallet pass means that everything on the back that is formatted in a way that the phone recognizes, like a phone number, an address, a URL, a link to iTunes or YouTube, and so on. Those apps are actually launched when the user taps a link on the back of the pass. What that means in real terms is that if you're promoting your podcast, you can send your subscribers a lock screen notification, and they have the ability to tap the back links, and your podcast will start playing in the correct app, iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, or whatever. It also means that if you're a realtor, for instance, and you include the address of a property you're promoting, a prospective buyer can tap the address on the back of the pass, launch maps, complete with driving directions. Tap to call, tap to email, tap to launch social media apps like Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and others. These are simply handled by the wallet app, and there's no coding or formatting involved. It really couldn't be any easier. Passes can be shared through a variety of means. The most popular method is including the pass URL as a link or in a print ad as a type in request using a browser. Other ways include the share function on the pass, having someone open Apple Wallet or scan the QR code directly, or even sending the pass via iMessages or email from the phone. Last but not least, the passes include location and proximity targeting features, which means that using the geofencing and location awareness that's built into smartphone offers you the ability to send lock screen notifications based on where someone is, as well as sending them time-based, or what we like to call static messages. You've probably seen this at the airport if you're having a boarding pass in your Apple Wallet on iPhone, for instance. When you get close to the security screening checkpoint, the boarding pass automatically pops up on your lock screen, and you don't have to search for it or open the app or unlock the phone to see it. So there you have it, the 2-minute rundown on just what and how a mobile pass works, where it goes in the iPhone, and what it can do.
Okay, so back to the topic at hand.
Sure.
At the end of the day, net neutrality is really not about how much your Netflix is going to cost or whether or not you can get Hulu to play at normal speed. It's really going to be about controlling the flow of information and, you know, at a very basic level, that translates to censorship in America.
So keep the politics out of it, remember?
Yeah, I'm doing my best.
Well, maybe you want to start with a little bit of history of the internet as we use it today.
Well, that's a great way to phrase it. As you probably know, the internet started out as a U.S. government project. It was designed for the Defense Department, like most everything else seems to be, and it was going to be used to create a communications network that could be used by the military and the government. But then it turned into a public project, which pretty much became commercialized, probably about the time you and I met, eh?
That's very true. And since we've both been in business on the internet since the early days, we have a slightly different view of it as a business medium, and not just one for sharing cat videos or taking personality quizzes to post on social media.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like the success of the internet is the weight that's dragging the whole thing down sometimes. The internet, in its most basic form, is a series of fiber cables and satellite or microwave links that send data from one place to another. Sort of like your old copper phone landline used to enable your phone to talk to someone else on their landline phone. And this internet, at least in the United States, was paid for by the customers who had those phone lines or cable TV connections or other devices that were using that old technology while they were building the new technology. So what they do is they still do this today. As a matter of fact, it's on your bill as a recovery cost surcharge or something similar. It's on all of your telecom bills, your cable bills, etc. The telecommunications companies get to tell the regulators how much they're going to make on their fiber installs. Yeah, like they get to decide how they're going to recoup the money that they had to spend paying off the municipalities to access the trenches next to the municipal roadbeds to lay the fiber and all that stuff. And this has all basically been calculated since the beginning. So we're going like 20 years almost.
So what's the big deal?
Well, there really shouldn't be a big deal. Like you say, customers have already paid for all this and the profit margin was already built into it from the beginning. But people like T-Mobile and Verizon and AT&T, they're a greedy lot. I guess you could call it, to put it mildly, they don't appreciate the fact that companies like Google or Facebook or Twitter, companies that are built on innovations, they absolutely detest the fact that the telecom companies don't like that they don't get advertising revenue on their networks that users of the networks, like a Google with AdWords, is seeing.
So they want a piece of that action.
Well, that kind of sums it up. Back in the spring of last year, the telecom companies were pushing to get the new FCC chairman to allow them to potentially insert their own ads into other people's websites. And they have the technology to do that, but they can only do it on non-SSL traffic.
Wait, what?
So SSL protected traffic, which is the little green lock on the side of the URL in your browser bar, that's protected by a secure socket layer, and it comes with a certificate, and it's a more encrypted version of the internet. So in those cases, the ISP can only see the domain name or the IP address of the site that you're visiting. They can't actually see the content that's hosted on the site. But if you have an unsecured website, then they can pretty much see all the content of every site that you're visiting.
Gotcha. But that's not what we're talking about today, right?
Right. We're talking about the latest vote by the FCC back in December to repeal the net neutrality rules that Tom Wheeler, the last chair of the FCC, put into service a couple years ago. Before that, we did have a thing, a different thing, so to speak. I talked about this on my blog, kimstewart.net. The name of the blog entry is called Me and John Oliver Are Out to Save Net Neutrality. And on the blog, I talk about the Open Internet Act of 2010, how Comcast and some of the other telecom companies went to court to try to kill it, and why Tom Wheeler, who is the old small business consumer-friendly chair of the FCC, decided to move forward with determining that the internet should be treated like a utility instead of a service in this country.
And what's the difference?
Well, if we treat it as a utility, then common carrier rules apply. And the ISPs are only allowed to charge for the bandwidth used as if it's electricity or water or natural gas. That means that they can charge more per unit to people using a smaller amount of units, but you can't charge more per unit to people because of what they're doing with the units.
Okay, I get it. But the loss of net neutrality with these FCCs, with the FCC vote, that changes how things can be paid for?
Yeah, not only that, but it changes how things can be charged on both sides of the equation. For instance, you could be made to pay more as a consumer to view specific content, Netflix, Hulu, whatever, or you could be made to pay more as a business owner to have your content viewed. So double dipping is not out of the question. There's nothing in the right now, current situation that says ISPs can't have it both ways, making people pay more from both sides for the same content.
It's all seriously nuts, and it doesn't seem like it's fair to small business owners, entrepreneurs, practically anyone but big corporations that have plenty of money to pay off these ISPs.
Well, you know, we could call it extortion if you like, since that's pretty much what it amounts to in the end. It could potentially affect people like us. ISPs could decide that iTunes has to pay more money to have search results shown on their networks, and then everyone with a small podcast would either have to pay Apple for their listings or lose their traffic entirely. The same thing could happen with Stitcher, Spreaker, Google Play Music, you name it. Or the ISPs could also refuse to allow consumers to see iTunes online unless they paid more money to access iTunes. Let's not forget that side of it.
So this is really a larger problem than what it sounds.
Yeah, and there are plenty of people who do not remember, like we do, the days when AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile had their own mobile wallet. It was called Isis Wallet, if you recall that.
I do.
And they banned Google Wallet from their subscribers' own Android phones.
Yes, and then it turned out that Isis Wallet was a terrible name for a wallet, and it changed names to something else, but finally died on the vine.
Exactly. But there's nothing that says they can't resurrect or create a new wallet, and they could force Apple Wallet or Google Wallet or any other wallet into the background or even completely off their networks. More insidiously, they could actually start blocking websites that have content that they don't agree with, or the government could potentially ask them to block stuff without telling anybody.
Do you think your government would do that?
Why not? TELUS, you're familiar with TELUS, did something similar in Canada way back in 2005. TELUS, back then, was Canada's second largest telecommunications company, and they started blocking access to a server that was hosting a website supporting a labor strike against TELUS. Researchers at both Harvard University and the University of Toronto found out that this action resulted in TELUS blocking an additional 766 unrelated sites.
That is just crazy. And it happened in Canada, no less.
I know, Canada. That's nuts. Oh, and let's don't forget about this other little incident. Verizon was in court in 2013 against the FCC over the Open Internet Order of 2010. And during the oral arguments, the judges asked whether or not the phone giant, Verizon, would favor some preferred services, content, or sites over others if the court overruled the agency's existing open internet rules. Verizon's lawyer, Helgi Walker, had this to say. I am authorized to state from my client today that but for these rules, we would be exploring those types of arrangements. Walker's admission might have gone unnoticed had she not repeated it at least 5 separate times during the arguments.
Yikes. So it really is true that net neutrality is a huge deal in the U.S. and potentially everywhere else, since other countries are affected as well by this type of censorship.
See, I knew you would figure out that it was censorship. It really doesn't matter what country you live in or what country you surf the internet in. If the site is a .com or has some form of U.S. content or hosting, then it's entirely possible that ISPs here in the States could charge content providers more to provide the content to non-U.S. viewers, or they could just stop allowing the traffic, same way that China does things.
So it's an uphill battle, but I guess it's going to take a while to straighten out.
Well, I'm super hopeful that either Congress or the courts are going to take up the issue and determine that internet access should be regulated as the same type of common carrier or utility access that things like your telephone, well, okay, your telephone except for your VoIP telephone, because that's being carried across the internet fibers, or electricity, running water, things like that, these should all be regulated the same way. Because the good of the people is certainly more important than the purse strings of a few companies that suck anyway.
Well, with that, I think we're out of here for this week. Thank you so much for that rundown, Kim.
Sure, and we'll see you next time.
And if you have any questions, feel free to contact us. You can find us at dominoresearch.com, mobilewalletmarketer.com, or at cannabiswallet.net.